we have with us the commissioner and his able-bodied people. So unless the committee has something else they'd like to discuss, we'll just go ahead and ask the commissioner if he'd come forth.
Senator Fisher was here a few minutes ago, but he'll be back, I believe.
Okay, good. Thank you. I know Senator Strugulewski was in Hess, and she had to go make a telephone call, so she anticipates being here, too. So, and I know that they had some specific questions. So go ahead, Commissioner.
Thank you. First, we're happy to respond to the request for information that's sent to us. And what we'll do, I think, is just follow step by step that's what you outlined in your letter to us.
Sure. Sounds good. Thank
and,
you.
And we'll get the questions right. The first one on conclusions for the task force on state revenue sharing. I'll ask Jeff Smith to give a report on that. We'll provide the task separately.
Okay. Make them all work today.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee.
So
the last 2 years.
You speak sort of softly. Maybe we can move the mic over, Jeff. So.
Sure. Could I have a copy of that remark? Send it to my staff.
Send it to your staff. You don't mean to swear by that and make an affidavit or something?
I don't think that Jeff has ever been noted to speak softly. Maybe he carries the big stick.
Well, he started out very softly, and I could see Trudy over there squinting, trying to figure out who was talking, so I thought I better do it.
For the last 2 years, the department has worked very closely with the task force that the governor has appointed to take a look at revenue sharing and municipal assistance with the commissioner's chairman of it. There were mainly six items that the task force looked at in regards to this issue, and that was looking at modifying the formula for distribution of the funds to come up with some way to increase the predictability of payments, to look at consolidating the programs into one state aid, to clarify the health facility language, to look at the treatment of unincorporated communities, and to look at raising the minimum entitlements under the program. After working with the Municipal League, the Mayor's Conference, and the appointed members of the task force, we came to the conclusion that there was no equitable way to modify the formula and satisfy everybody's concerns. Somebody would have gotten hurt fairly significantly, and there was just no way to modify that formula. And we recommended no change. In regard to increasing the predictability, I think this was the major problem brought by everybody, and one that we were the most successful in changing. And the governor plans on introducing some legislation in the next 2 weeks to allow the department to use prior year data in its distribution formula for revenue sharing and municipal assistance. What this will mean is before the municipalities prepare their budgets, they will know what their exact entitlement will be. When the fiscal year starts on July 1st, we will be in a position to write the checks July 1st. So that there'll be two things accomplished by that. One, they'll know what their amount is going to be before they put their fiscal year budget together. And two, they'll receive all of their monies at the start of the fiscal year.
Well, so you're not going to have two allocations. Isn't that what we do now? Yeah. So you're only going to have one at that time. Okay. All right. Thank you.
And on the health facility definition last year, we were able to accomplish a clarification of that definition so it's understood not only within the department staff but within the different eligible entities out there how health facilities are classified and will be treated for payment. Unincorporated communities was a very complex and complicated issue, as most of you are aware. As we delved into it, we found the issues were much larger than any revenue sharing payments that they received. And we deferred many of the questions and considerations that were raised in the task force to the Commissioner's Task Force on State, Federal, Tribal Relations for them to address in their report. And in regards to raising the minimum entitlements, we recommended no change, not on the basis that there wasn't a need for an increase or it wasn't justified, but simply on the economics of it. To raise the minimum entitlements even a little bit would have cost $4 million based on the revenues that simply don't exist. I think the task force worked extremely hard, coordinated with all of the interested parties, and I believe that when the governor's legislation is introduced, you'll see that it has widespread support amongst the mayors and the municipalities of the state.
Thank you. Thank you. Just a minute, let me see if there are questions. Oh, let the record show that Senator Sturgiewski and Senator Vic Fisher have joined us. Thank you. Okay. And any of the committee have any report, questions regarding the report? And you do, does the governor already have the draft legislation prepared, or it won't be prepared until he introduces it? I mean, just, we could see a rough draft of it.
It's not available for distribution. It's still going under consideration in the governor's office. But
okay, hopefully, and in
it's
2 weeks, you say?
A couple of weeks. A
couple of weeks. Okay. Good. All right. Thank you. Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair. Committee members. I'll talk about the task force on federal state tribal relationship. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of problem with the villages about what jurisdiction they have, so the governor appointed a task force here in May of 1984. I think you already know, but maybe I'll just go through the members. The president of the Senate appointed two members, Senators Jan Fakes and Rick Halford. The Speaker of the House at the time appointed two House members, Ramona Barnes and Tony Vasca. And since they attended all the hearings, we thought they should stay on through the conclusions, which they've done, and the Speaker of the House has agreed to that. So they're continuing on the task force.
Mm-hmm.
We also have Mr. Balsiger from Oregon, who's a BIA employee. Tim Deasis, who is from Juneau, works for the BIA. We're familiar with the issues that we're dealing with. Sandra Borbridge from the governor's office. John Hope, who at the time represented Plinkett and Haida, but is now with the Department of Community and Regional Affairs. Agnes Brown, who's president of the Taiwanese Corporation. Willie Goodwin, who's mayor of Kotzebue, or was at the time. And Gary Ricketts, who is from Stebbins. We traveled throughout the state beginning in Ketchikan, but we had hearings in Ketchikan and Anchorage. Ketchikan and Sitka, Anchorage, Kodiak, St. Mary's, Nome, Kotzebue, and Fairbanks. We timed those meetings to public hearings to coincide with regional meetings. For instance, in St. Mary's, there are 40 villages present. In Nome and Kotzebue, there are about 12 villages for the regional meetings. In the Kodiak hearing, all of the villages on the island were at that meeting. So we covered about 70 villages and heard from about 250 people. And while it was not as extensive as the hearings held by Judge Berger, I think we heard much of the same testimony.
Mm-hmm.
And distilling the testimony down, I think it can be summarized that what we heard was a lot of dissatisfaction, unhappiness with the government that was considered remote, insensitive, and didn't listen to the local concerns or allow local input to decisions that were made, particularly in education and fish and game and state troopers. So it's not a unique situation.
Mm-hmm.
Remote government stayed back to the Boston Tea Party. So what we try to do is come up with some recommendations that will deal with we're trying to get the government closer to people, and that's an old phrase that we're all familiar with. But there are a couple of issues. One is the legal questions about what rights do tribes have, or if tribes exist. And there's a big question about whether tribes exist or whether they were wiped out with the Native Claims Settlement Act. And I'm sure that a narrow legal question won't be resolved until it's gone through the courts. And the second question is, if there are tribes, what jurisdiction do they have control over?
Mm-hmm.
And in the legal terms, it's referred to as Indian country. And what is Indian country in Alaska? Everybody agrees that the only tribe in Indian country in the state is Metlakatla.
Mm-hmm.
There are other arguments that Benatai is a reservation.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Some of the other places still exist.
Arctic Village, right?
Arctic Village.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so those are questions that, as a task force, we will be unable to resolve. Just to get when they talk about Indian country and what jurisdiction they have, they talk about police powers, controlling fish and game, mm-hmm. and the courts, and a whole host of things. I think personally that the word sovereignty is a misnomer. It's a word that's kind of a flashpoint that causes strong emotions on both sides. We're not really talking about sovereignty, we're talking about limited self-control. So we're trying to come up with recommendations that will soothe the dealings of the unincorporated communities, small incorporated communities, and IRAs when they deal with state government. Those recommendations, as you know, we have, the committee is purposely made up of people with strong opinions and ideas about what and what does not exist in those areas. And so we've had a number of meetings, some of them 2 days long, and we're in our third draft of the report, and in spite of that, we may end up with a minority report. So
we know about those, Rick.
So we hope to have a report for the governor in about 2 or 3 weeks.
So the one we have is the latest one that's for publication, is that right? Is that this one that you guys sent over this morning? It's
no, that was a paper done.
December 1985?
No, that was a paper done by the department to answer some questions that the task force had.
Oh, okay.
I'm sure. About local government.
If I might just make two comments.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. First of all, on sovereignty, the chairman of this committee and I were members of a joint committee during the interim looking at alcohol problems and local option laws in rural areas. And I can speak for myself and probably for Senator DeVries that we were tremendously impressed with the situation in Arctic Village where they do exercise sovereignty and they do control alcohol, unlike the situation we saw in any other community. And they ascribe it, and obviously it is due to their exercise of certain sovereign powers that essentially override the constraints of even the state constitution.
Due process.
And due process.
Right, everything all rolled into
But it is an effective device, and of course community sanctions go with it. The word sovereignty is used very widely there. The other comment I want to make is on this staff report of December 85, and I was just skimming it while sitting here, and I notice on page 22 you deal with what they did. I guess you're the head of the department. Creation of special purpose borrows would create and so on. Again, once more, the staff of the department is totally negligent in understanding what the Constitution says about boroughs and approaching it in terms of unorganized boroughs, the concept of a self-determination within regionalized, unorganized boroughs. And you've heard me rant and rave on that many times. This mandatory special purpose borough is, I agree, is total nonsense. But there's an in-between approach that can be used, and that is to regionalize and then focus as much attention as possible on people's ability to manage their own affairs within regional unorganized boroughs, because the legislature will never effectively sit, as recommended here, as the assembly for the unorganized borough, if for no other reason that the majority of the legislators are from Anchorage and Fairbanks, and they don't understand how things work out there, and they just won't do it.
I think on that, that those were not really recommendations. They were kind of spelling out options and how they might work, that raised by questions by people on the committee.
My problem is that sort of the basic constitutional option isn't even in there. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm. Well, so just, yes. Madam Chair, on the issue, you know, after the result of the work we had done, there was a proposal for breaking the unorganized borough into a series of groups, at least for planning. And I'm certainly people can take issue with it, but I cannot help but feel that all of the movement toward quote unquote sovereignty in the broader term, particularly in the Lori Cusquim, comes from a tremendous sense of frustration. The people feel left out of it, and they feel that by asserting their independence, that something is going to happen. Obviously, it's tied into the land, too. But we have no plan to move the state forward, and I think it's a tragedy. And it's going to get worse and more fractured as the money goes down. And there's been a total lack of really addressing what's happening. Sure, special purpose things are not it. We know that. But we're not moving toward the kind of economic planning. Absolutely none exists for rural Alaska, in my opinion. I may be incorrect, but I don't believe there's any regional strategy money in the budget. Maybe I'm wrong. Correct me if I am.
There's $175,000.
For plans that are underway or for new?
For
completion one.
For completion?
Of one that's existing.
Well, I was talking about new regional plans or a proposal to encourage people to move into regional planning. NANO is, you know, extraordinarily compact and a lot of things going, but those people or NANO region just worked for years to make something happen. We ought to, I think, aggressively be promoting the formation and working with people to help them look at the basics of where they are. I think we're going to see more and more and more of this kind of stuff go on. It's just, it's becoming unglued, and it's going to be worse without the dollars. I'm convinced of it.
Yeah. Matt, jump for my... There are a lot of opinions about what can be done, and I think you're absolutely right on the remoteness of government. Behind all the frustration is a fear of loss of the land.
Sure.
And I don't know how to do it except to disperse government. We have two big government centers, Juneau and Anchorage, and in the department we've made some minor moves to open up some new offices. For instance, from along the Yukon River from Canada to the mouth of the Yukon, about 700 or 800 miles by river, the department is not represented. We're putting one person in Galena. We opened up an office in Kodiak where we weren't represented. And there'll be a generalist who will handle the housing and the child welfare and the old people's programs and those kind of things with technical backup out of Anchorage. And where we can, we're going to do that. And by doing that, we save money instead of putting a high-paid person out there, which in the case of Nome, we have people making more than the governor because of the differential. So we think we can disperse government, get it closer out there, get people contact point with government, or they can get some help. And hopefully we can come up with a model that maybe other agencies can emulate that it works good enough. But.
Madam Chair, just to comment on that, I'll never forget going out to Hooper Bay when the one telephone in town didn't work, and we were having some meetings there, and some issues came up. DOT, Department of Health and Social Services, you got a damn phone that didn't work, plus you didn't know who to call if the phone did work. And talk about being remote. I mean, you can't have a person there, but there has to be some way closer to get some answers
sure.
for people.
Yeah. And the complaint, I don't like to dwell on the complaints, but the two contacts that they have are when you have trouble, they call for help, and the policeman flies into town, picks up someone, hauls them away, or Fish and Game comes in to pinch somebody. That's mm-hmm. Those are common complaints.
Mm-hmm. Enforcement or...
Well, I think that you're on the right track. I have some problem with some of the concept because, as I see it, Commissioner, out in our district, we have what I call phantom government, where we've got so many contracts out for services that I find myself bumping into three or four contracts in TOC by three or four different entities, and yet that all should be funneled through, quote, a local entity instead of Tanana chiefs and I hate to name them all off, but you know what I'm saying is that you seem to have all kinds of governments or all kinds of contracts from government, and they're serving a special constituency and not a broad constituency, and they're getting away from the bases, and I think that this is probably going to resolve itself when we start tightening up on the budget and those people upstairs on the fifth floor have to start looking at the realist programs of, you know, how we're going to do this for the greatest number of good, why that there'll be some. But correct me, Senator Fisher, if I'm wrong, but it seems to me that that was the reason why we argued the service district concept in the Constitution, was that that was the embryo of local government. When somebody wanted a service, a school, in fact, in 1961 or 62, I think I introduced that state schools would be administered by state school service districts within that area boundary, that the purpose of the service district was to, when people wanted to do something, they had self-help and that the state would help them, nurture them along, but not set up the structure. In other words, I would rather see us go from giving them the opportunity to build rather than to have a mandatory thing come down on top of them. Because I think you have a good example in, what is the name of that place, Accuchuck?
Accuchuck,
where the people don't want the local government. They want a different kind of government. But how do you take them to the trough and make them do something if they don't want to do, But I see right now one of our biggest problems, and I don't know whether that exists in the rest of the state because I haven't been at it long enough to do the research on it, but I know in District J why we have some real problems with doubling up of, and I think that's one of the things that your community, that Community Regional Affairs should look at and try to minimize the number of contracts out there, and you're going to have to leave somebody out.
Yes,
I'd have two comments. You're right about the number of contracts going out, but I think they exist for a couple of reasons. One is they're filling a gap where, like I talked about earlier, government is not out there. Mm-hmm. So by contract, they're doing it. The second one is, in most cases, I think it can be proven they do it cheaper than government. Mm-hmm. And in a lot of ways, they're more responsive than agencies are. And so I think if we could solve those two problems, dispersing government into those areas at a reasonable cost, we'll move a long way to getting away from the present situation.
Well, yes, Madam Chairman, but you know, and I agree with you that they are, and I've talked to Spud Williams and Tanama Chiefs, and they are, if you figure the whole criteria out. But then Crowban is doing the same thing for one side of this road, and Tanama Chiefs doing it for the other side of the road. That seems to me kind of ridiculous.
Further questions or comments from the Commissioner? Okay, next subject.
Point number third, Doug
Griffin. Okay. Perfect segue. And my name is Doug Griffin, the Deputy Director for the Division of Municipal and Regional Assistance. And Senator Coghill mentioned Accuchuck, and that was the third topic that was requested. Oh, that's okay. That was requested by Senator DeVries. And her question specifically is the status of cities seeking dissolution. And to date, Accuchuck is still the only one that has formally petitioned the Local Boundary Commission for dissolution. Mm-hmm. Just a brief history on how that, on what happened in this instance. They did petition the Boundary Commission. They've had several elections out there where people did vote overwhelmingly that they wanted to dissolve their municipal form of government in favor of an IRA government. And the first petition was turned down by the Boundary Commission on grounds that they've not addressed adequately the provision that all outstanding debts were settled and or creditors' claims satisfied. The Accuchuck asked for reconsideration of this denial. The Boundary Commission did approve, that did say they would reconsider, and looked at it again. And basically, they again denied their request for disillusionment, saying that they, even though they may technically have failed to fully function as a local government, that they still met the minimum standards of being a city under Alaska's statutes. And one of the things that the Boundary Commission further asked in this whole thing, they were sort of, I think, felt they were in a quandary, and that the statutes did not adequately deal with the situation that was before them, in that an area, a community that clearly no longer wanted to be a municipal government, was not able to exercise what could be deemed their right to disband their municipal form of government. So in the report, which I think, I believe the LBC will put this question before the legislature, probably before this committee, is asking for some type of guidance on how to deal with this situation. When you clearly have the circumstances of a community that has not really operated as a city under state law, has not held meetings, perhaps has not held elections, and other criteria that we generally use to recognize a city as being a functioning entity, how can they go about dissolving their municipal government if, in fact, that is what they want to do?
Mm-hmm.
I think most people in our department do not feel it's necessarily a good idea to dissolve their municipal government. It becomes a question of if that's really what they want to do. Perhaps the statute needs to be a little bit more forgiving or a little more tolerable in allowing this matter to go forward. So there have been no other ones, but we have heard rumblings, particularly in the Yukon-Kuskokwim area. It seems to be centered primarily in that region of the state, the southwestern part of the state, from as many as 15 other cities, that there is also interest in dissolution, but none have gone to the formal process of petitioning us. To my knowledge, none has actually held an election on the question informally within the community. So at this point, it's at a very informal stage. There are a couple of lawsuits resulting out of the Akiachuk decision. Perhaps the communities are waiting to see what happens on those cases, and I'll get into that when I cover the next section of your request.
Okay. Yes, Senator Fisher.
Madam Chair, I sat in on the meeting where the Akiachuk request was turned down a second time by the commission, and it was a horrendously frustrating experience, I believe, for the representatives of Akiachuk as well as for the representatives of the department, because the department at that point essentially said, let them go, and the commission stuck to the real tight letter of the law. And apparently the law is geared to dissolution of a city that has ceased to exist, that is a ghost town. And, Madam Chair, not much would be gained by the commission coming to us and saying, well, here is a terrible situation that we faced and that was frustrating and we had to obey the law and so on. I would, Madam Chair, request that the department provide a committee with guidelines or specifics or legislation or whatever to change the existing law so that at least the committee could have something before us to see where the problems lay, and Margaret Rutherford and the others in the department that were involved probably could tell us exactly what needs to be done to effect a change. So I would suggest that we'd be given this for further consideration.
Does anyone know if that will be in the Local Boundary Commission's report, some recommendations and what they anticipate? That's all right. Sure, go ahead.
They have specific recommendations contained in their report.
Okay. Will that answer Senator Fisher's questions regarding proposed change?
I would like a draft completely. I think we need to come in with some specific language.
Okay. All right. Sure. Yeah, I don't have any problem with that request.
Do they in the Boundary Commission, do they just make a narrative of the problem, or do they make specific legislative change?
It's the narrative and ask specific questions.
So why don't you take that, Madam Chairman?
Sure.
Why don't you take the draft of that and reduce it to something that you'd like to see come through as a legislative proposal? That's what I think is the point.
Uh-huh. It's my understanding the report will be read across the Senate floor tomorrow. Is that correct, Jeff? So we haven't seen it yet.
Madam Chair, what's our timetable on that?
45 days from the day it's read across is my understanding. So tomorrow would start the 45 days.
Good. We can hardly wait.
We'll be ready to go, I guess. Any other questions for Doug?
We can't either.
We're going to see a lot of each other. Okay, then let's.
Madam Chair, yeah. I have confidential information that Senator Ferguson can solve all our problems.
Is he? Okay. All right, that's great.
Just kidding.
Okay. Then Doug, you're going to handle number four also.
Number four. Attached, it's after the. What I've done is I've kind of looked at the major cases where the department was involved pending court cases. A full list is, at least we think it's complete, is this Xerox copy that we obtained from Susan Cox in the Department of Law.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't go into all of these, but that provides you a total list. And then I highlighted about looks like about seven, and then I was told there's one more I needed to add, so I will go into a little depth on that. But I'll just briefly run through them. The oldest case that's, I suppose, a major consequence is the Matsu Borough versus Hammond. This, as you can see, dates back to the prior administration and deals with the way that the department at that time determined population for purposes of calculating revenue sharing, but more specifically on, for purposes of calculating the tax cap for the North Slope Borough. And the state's position has been upheld in Superior Court, and oral arguments were recently heard by the state Supreme Court, so that's where that stands right now.
No estimation on the date that
you
expect a decision?
I don't know when a decision is going to be.
We heard May.
The next one is Akichuk versus Smith. This one deals not with the dissolution.
How come it wasn't brought?
I don't know.
Jeff signed it.
He will believe in equitable division of losses. I was acting commissioner when they filed the suit. I was acting chief of staff.
You might have a lawsuit, too, somewhere out there.
Do you have one of your own, Commissioner, that you can
I think I'll have one soon.
Oh, okay.
This case did not have really anything to do with the dissolution, as you might think, with Akichuk. This is a case brought by the Native American Rights Foundation really on behalf of Akichuk and a few other communities. I think Noatak and Circle are also plaintiffs in this case. It basically challenges the language that used to be in the state revenue sharing program, whereby we were to pay state revenue sharing to unincorporated communities only to those communities identified as Native village governments. And based on an attorney general's opinion in 1981, we opened that program up, paid all unincorporated communities in the unorganized borough, whether they be Native or non-Native. The Title 29 bill corrected this problem, basically brought this portion of the statute and the revenue sharing program into compliance with the Constitution. But the plaintiffs are contending that by giving money to all unincorporated communities, we diluted the pot, therefore we shortchanged Native village governments, which by statute were the only ones that were supposed to get funding. And even though we are named in the suit, we were relying on the legal advice of the Attorney General's office. Currently, there's a motion for a preliminary injunction and it's waiting to be heard. The Circle Village Council, also related versus the state of Alaska, is also related to the revenue sharing program. This is an instance, we've had a couple of instances in dealing with unincorporated communities where we've had more than one entity apply for funds. Cantwell was the first community, Circle was the second. In this one, we, in effect, made an administrative decision to divide the funding in FY85 between the two entities and try to work with them to have just a single application the following year. And surprisingly enough, it worked. This year we did just have one applicant. So it appears that the community worked out among themselves who was going to apply and how they were going to distribute their state revenue sharing funds. At this point, this case has been briefed before Superior Court in Fairbanks, and we are awaiting a decision. Again, it is tied very tightly to the fact that we interpreted that Native village government's language to being that anybody had a shot. In effect, what happened in Circle is the Native Council applied and a primarily non-Native village or non-profit community corporation also applied. And
so is that an area in the law that we really need to tighten up then, or do you have some regulations or something? I mean,
still
if we're getting lawsuit after lawsuit on it, it seems like we should do something about it.
We are trying to address that in regulations, and we don't. That may or may not be the answer. It may be something that would be good to look at in a statutory change. Mm-hmm. Again, it gets into this difficulty the commissioner referred to dealing with the unincorporated communities,
right,
where there is not one state recognized entity, and everybody sort of has a fair shot, and they all have their own special interests. It creates a difficulty.
It just seems like to me that this is just the start of how many of these cases you're going to get, I think.
Yeah, we were lucky. We did not get any this year. FY86 program year for revenue sharing. So I'm, having been the hearing officer in both of those cases, I was relieved as much as anyone.
Good.
The next case is the Kenai Peninsula Borough versus the State of Alaska. This involves the use of fairly new statutory language given, power given to the State Assessor's Office to determine when major errors are made in property tax valuation or taxations. In this instance, we had the Kenai Peninsula Borough did something unique in my knowledge, in that they taxed real and personal property at two different levels. They classified their oil and gas property as personal property and, in effect, were taxing it at a higher rate than they were real property. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the state assessor felt that this was contrary to statute, did constitute a major error. We took exception with this method of taxation, in effect asked the Kenai Peninsula Borough to cease and desist, and they instead basically appealed the administrative finding of our department to Superior Court, and that's where the case resides. The case has not been heard yet. I don't know even if briefs have been filed, but to my knowledge, the case has not been heard. The next three cases involve the Boundary Commission, one being Dennis Wise versus the Boundary Commission. This pertained to an annexation decision, which I think this committee reviewed last year. It was an 84 decision that was before the legislature in 1985. In effect, Mr. Wise is charging that the Boundary Commission acted outside of its authority, abused its discretion in deciding to allow this annexation in the city of Fairbanks. And the Superior Court has already dismissed several of the plaintiff's points, so they've whittled away a lot of the arguments that have been brought by the plaintiff. And the plaintiff's, based on information from the Attorney General, the plaintiff's brief is due next Monday, January 27th. The next cases I bunched, there's one is Akichuk versus the state, and the other Willikasali versus the state. The first one was filed in federal district court. This addresses the Boundary Commission's denial of the Akichuk's petition to dissolve. The second case, related and basically on the same grounds, has been filed in state superior court. Those suits have just recently been brought and at very early stages of litigation. The next one, the North Slope Borough versus the state, pertains to the recent decision by the Boundary Commission to detach or conditionally detach a portion of the North Slope Borough for inclusion in the future Nana Borough. And again, as this is a late breaking event, this is also in the very early stages of litigation. The one that's not on your briefing packet that Marty Rutherford suggested that be included is Daryl Morris et al. Versus the state. This is regarding a determination that was made by the Division of Municipal and Regional Assistance at this point, recognizing the Evansville Village Council as the appropriate village entity in the Evansville-Bettles area for purposes of consultation and so forth in managing lands under the Municipal Lands Trustee Program. And again, that suit was just brought recently and is in the very, very early stages of litigation. Those are the major ones as far as court cases are filed. There is a complete list, at least it was complete as of the end of 1985. That shows a few other ones. Primarily, there are some CETA cases, dealing with CETA audits under the old CETA program. Those are fairly old, and perhaps have even been cleared, but just have not been taken off the system. Susan Cox was not thought that may in fact be the case. But if any of those do interest members of the committee, we can gather information on them. We just felt that we would try to highlight the major cases that were in the courts right now.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I guess I had thought that there were more precedential cases out, or possibly precedential cases dealing with the quote-unquote sovereignty issue. These don't seem to hit so much that. Are there other cases that I'm not aware of?
There's some in federal court that maybe I know of, but maybe it doesn't involve the state.
Maybe it's federal court. I was thinking of... I thought Venati and Arctic Village, was there one that possibly?
Nothing.
Venati tribal government, which takes in that whole area, has been sparring with the state for a good number of years, but I don't think they've brought any action. I think they've, most of it's been administratively, hasn't it?
Well, the FAA contracts for building airports.
But this does not speak really to any sovereignty issues. Am I correct?
That's correct.
Not specifically. They sort of skirt them. These ones brought dealing with that native village government language, I mean, they're basically saying, contrary to the Attorney General's advice we're getting, that that native village government language, when it was on the books, could be read literally and not be unconstitutional, because that part of their contention is that the state recognized government have a government-to-government relationship with an IRA council or a traditional council. So in that way, it in effect tries to bring the governmental entity in a native village to the forefront and raise it above, say, a nonprofit corporation that's formed under state law. That in effect it should be given a higher recognition than a nonprofit. In effect, what we ran into in Circle was that we were treating them equally. We gave them the same level of recognition, a nonprofit corporation and a traditional village council, and treated them the same way in our final determination, which we were, that dividing the money was designed to be a stopgap thing to try to just plug the dike and work with the community to try to produce just a single application, hopefully to get the community to, the members of the community to work together. And it appears to have been successful to some degree.
Thank you.
Yes.
My own personal view on sovereignty is that our congressional delegation says it's a state's issue, but I believe that it's a federal issue because the federal government names the game and they arbitrate the decisions. And that's, if we were allowable, they would have told us so.
I think the sovereignty, the real sovereignty, the president sitting in court cases are out there yet to be filed in the areas of taxation, jurisdiction of land bases, control of courts. I think they're not to the courts yet, but I think those are the ones that are out there waiting to happen and are going to be the ones that are going to be the real president setting one that Senator Sturgis.
Okay.
I think the big issue is still out there as to what's Indian land in Alaska. Is there such a thing as Indian land in Alaska after the land claim settlement. I think that's going to be the first hurdle that's going to have to be gone over, and then I think that what you're referring to, Senator, is that the jurisdiction of the feds doing things, how they do them, and how do they adjudicate them. Are we going to get that within a framework of our state government, or is it going to be in the framework of some hokey-pocus government scheme from Washington, D.C.?
Chair. Yeah. On Frank's point, under the state constitution, we can't discriminate. Only the federal government can, in behalf of Indian people, and they do in other states. In this state, the only place everybody agrees that it exists is Metlakatla. Any place outside of that, there's an argument about whether it exists. So we're bound to live within the constitution, which is what our report is trying to deal with, how to deal better with it. Mm-hmm. Within those constraints.
And fifth item, maybe before we get to coastal zone, is the shortfalls that we have in the funding. And how are you anticipating handling that? Are you going to file a supplemental bill? Or?
No, we don't have any plans for supplemental on any programs.
So the municipalities that are out that haven't received funding on these programs are just going to be out? Well, in this, the letter that you, in our folder is a letter that talks about
meeting with Commissioner Noddy on the one incorporation that has taken place since we passed Title 29, and there's no provisions in there for transition funds, and that and because of looking for funds last year, they took the money from the holding transition fund, and so we need to put in a special bill for Bettles for their, they've incorporated, the only community that's incorporated since we passed 29. And I talked to the commissioner, and he doesn't have any objections. They're not going to do it from the department side, but I think that it should be done from the committee side.
Just one. Thousands of dollars.
$50,000. There's only one community that has incorporated, but that's it. In the corpus of the 29 that you give each community, that there's a grant of transition grant of $50,000 to a new incorporated community.
And they're the ones that have incorporated.
More government spending.
More government spending.
Have you talked to Senator Sackett about it? It's his district.
No, but I'm going to. Just brought it up today. But, okay. I mean, it wouldn't make any difference where it is. It's the only community that's...
Jeff wants to talk. Maybe he's found
$50,000. Well, you got it?
I'd rather he found $2.4 million.
Right, he's going to talk about the shortfalls.
Oh, well, he's going to talk about the larger figure, right? The $2.5 million?
Right. Mm-hmm. $50,000 is easy. I think the senior citizen program, no other program, I think, illustrates the problems that the state is experiencing in reconciling the revenue picture versus the demands and the needs. We raised this question 3 years ago to the legislature. We think it still cries out for an answer. The administration does not have the ability to do it alone, nor, I believe, does the legislature, but in working together with the people of the state, I think we need to answer this policy question regarding this program and similar programs that have been created. And it's a fairly basic one, and that policy question is this program established and in existence similar to the longevity bonus program, where we are simply recognizing the contributions of the senior citizens of the state for their past, present, and future contributions to us? Or is this program really intended to assist those senior citizens who are less able to pay the property taxes on their homes, their individual homes, and to prevent any of them from having to sell that home merely to pay taxes? The program has grown tremendously over the last 3 years. The program will go tremendously more in the future years because of the basic problem with the state's finances. We don't have as much money to spend as we've had in the past. Our aid to municipalities is decreasing. Property taxes are going to rise. These are very sensitive to property tax increases. And if you track, ever since fiscal year 84, when state aid to municipalities started to level off and decline, and the increase in property taxes throughout the state, and the impact it's had on this program has been tremendous. The ability for this department, based on its funding and the type of programs we're involved with, simply does not have the money to move from one program area into the fully fund this. And I think before we even look at fully funding this program, we need to answer that basic policy question. And when you have an answer to it, then I think there are many options that we can look at in terms of how to treat this program, from anywhere from a local option at the municipal level to fully funding it as we currently do. Now, there is one problem mentioned in the letter, and it's come up more importantly in the last couple of days. Commissioner Nottie yesterday morning made a policy decision that will allow for the transfer of funds into the renters program, which goes to reimburse the individual for the past year expenses they've incurred in renting their home or an apartment, so that they are not prorated, so that they don't receive 50 or 60% of what they've actually spent out of pocket. And those senior citizens that are renters who have an individual liability, if we do not have sufficient funds in that program, will be made whole and will be reimbursed 100%.
Mm-hmm.
It's the homeowners where there's the real problem in the farm.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
You know, last year we took some beginning steps on this with the governor's bill, some really needed cleanup and duplicative issues dealing with part of the program. And I noticed that resides in House CNRA. Do you have any idea what happened to the bill in the House?
I spoke with the chairman. That bill was assigned to House CNRA the last day of the session.
Oh, we didn't get it over till then.
I requested the chairman to hold a hearing on that
piece of legislation as soon as possible with the goal to get that out of the committee and on through the process in the House as soon as possible.
Do you have any idea, Commissioner, how much difference it's going to make capping the senior citizen program?
Yes, it does not solve the problem totally.
No, but how much does it solve?
$980,000.
So almost 1 million then of the 2 million shortfall might have been resolved by that bill. I mean, that's very substantial.
Now, our estimates for FY87 is that we'll be short in the homeowners program 3.8 million. If Senate Bill 113 passes, we'll only be short 2.8. But I think you can see that this program is growing.
All right, is that funding at exactly the same level as fiscal year 86, and you see it going from 2.1 to 3.8?
The shortfall now will be 3.8 million.
Yeah, I understand that, but is that 1.5 million in addition, and the funding level is the same?
Yes, that's
so the program, that's program growth.
Yes.
We got a problem. Mm-hmm. Local communities have a problem.
Yeah, that's right, because the local communities are the ones that, like, you know, the other people in their local community are the ones that are really paying those taxes, not the state. And that's not the way the program was set up. And I don't, you know, I'm not sure that everybody out there realizes that. That's what's going to happen.
Say that again. The
people in the local communities that pay the taxes are paying
the
additional taxes.
The cost.
Right. We've shifted from the state doing it to the local communities. And like you said, that maybe that's one of the options, to give the local community the option to do it. Because then you'd be at least up front with the other taxpayers saying that you are going to, you know, incur this liability.
And the problem's been really further compounded, I believe, with the addition of the disabled veteran 2 years ago into the program at a 50% disabled rate. And we did our best working with the Veterans Administration and other organizations to estimate the number of disabled veterans in Alaska. Mm-hmm. And
there were
even surprised that there were, you know, a lot more than we had estimated. So that's been a real problem and just compounding the difficulties we've had with the seniors.
Right. But it's your understanding that the administration is not going to request a supplemental appropriation. Did I understand that? You are not going to.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Along this line, Commissioner, I have a memo. I don't think it's gotten to the chairman yet. One of the priorities of the Municipal League has been to have a fiscal note on legislation that would passed by the legislature that would impact local communities. And I think more and more we're going to see legislation go through that may have an impact on local communities, and those that have a tax base are going to have to eat that in terms of property taxes. And as I recall, and I may be incorrect on this, that there was some hesitation on the department because of the amount of time it would take to work on fiscal notes to support that legislation. And I'd just like to alert you that I'd be very interested in seeing that go, and I hope that you'll look at that very carefully when it comes through, because we're really throwing a burden. And the way the law is set up now, we're just saying, okay, local taxpayer, you're in an area with a lot of that, you're just going to have to pick it up, and that creates all kinds of problems. And it's just one example of a kind of a cost-sharing situation.
Any other comments from the committee? One of the other things we had asked that didn't get on the letter was coastal zone management, and I understand they are prepared to discuss that, so we'll give them a few minutes to do that.
Let me just point out one thing that may come to you. What triggered it, Senator, was your comment about this belief, and that is, they feel that they want more money for revenue sharing or municipal assistance, and we are funding the municipal assistance essentially at the same numbers last year. Actually, it's tied to the gross receipts on corporate taxes, and if we were to follow that, we'd be coming in at $6 million less. So we're holding them level. If we were to follow them, what we're required to do by law would be much less. So you may hear something about that. I'm sure you will.
I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. I don't think you'll hear the word full funding on municipal assistance come from any municipality this year.
All right. I guess we're ready then for coastal zone, if you are.
Yes. Nelda Workington is here for Hamilton.
All right. Coastal zone. Madam Chair, just very briefly, I requested and have a bill in my committee that would bring coastal zone back to, that incentive resources back to review of the legislature. And I guess I'm looking to find how that program is working out there. I have not moved that bill, although there's been some interest in seeing that happen. And I guess I'm really interested in how coastal zone is working, and if it's coordinating and working well with the state's various planning efforts. So just a little snapshot of what's happening out there with coastal zone is what my interest is.
Okay. Again, my name's Nelda Workington, and I'm the I oversee the coastal management program within the Department of Community and Regional Affairs. You may also want to invite representatives from Division of Governmental Coordination,
sure,
to address that issue too. But from my perspective, I would say the program is working very well. There are approximately 33 coastal districts, and I would say the vast majority of those have their district programs approved. The controversial areas, the controversial programs, are the coastal resource service areas, the regional districts, because they do encompass such a large area, and because the oil industry tends to get more interested, the mining industry tends to get more interested in those plans. Of the five coastal resource service areas, the Nana, Bering Straits, YK, Aleutians East, and Bristol Bay, three of those have been approved by the Coastal Policy Council. One of those has received federal approval, and two of those are currently pending for federal approval. The Nana program will be at the council this spring, and the Bering Straits program should follow within the year. So you're seeing programs being approved, and to me that's a success story. I don't know if you're aware of the process, but before that goes to the Coastal Policy Council, all the state agencies, but primarily the resource agencies, DNR, Fish and Game, and DEC, get together and go through those programs, those policies, which become state law in the end. They go through those with a fine-tooth comb, and you see a lot of negotiation going on before those programs ever reach the Coastal Policy Council. And because the state agencies are involved at that level, then you do see comparisons with, like, DNR area plan and so forth. What else would you like to know?
Yeah.
What else I should say at this point?
Probably OMB is the one there, or are you, in terms of what the gets back to that kind of special service district. And I consider those along with the REAAs as special service districts. And from a local government perspective, do you see any need for change in legislation or anything dealing with the coastal resource areas after they have the plans? It's pretty gray out there as to what happens after that. And my personal feeling is you'd see quite a bit of hesitancy on the part of the legislature to give more authority to those on an ongoing basis, because they're, even though they have elected boards, they're not, you know, they don't have it fit under the municipal code in the same way.
Well, you have focused in on a real issue, because the, as you identified, the Coastal Resource Service Area boards are only a recommending body.
Mm-hmm.
They have no authority unto themselves. They only recommend to the Coastal Policy Council, and even in program development, they don't have any. The bottom line is they don't have the authority. They have a lot of authority in developing the program, but still, the bottom line, they don't have the yay or the nay vote. And they don't have any implementation authority. Again, they only recommend on permits. They are given, their opinion is given great weight, they say. When we developed comments on the Sovereignty Task Force, that was considered, that they are out there. They are elected bodies. And there may be some way to use them to a greater degree. And I don't think we're prepared to recommend what that would be, but they have gained experience now as being an elected body and functioning as a board representing their region, and there may very well be other ways that they can be utilized.
Senator Ferguson?
I'd not like to utilize them, if you don't mind. It'd be like the RAA school districts, and they have elected boards, and to use them for something else than they're elected for.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend it without a statutory change or something that's gone through the legislature, for sure. But they have been functioning as a planning body and have become aware of the issues in their region, unlike the REA, which to me is more a specialized group. But the CRSA, one of their roles was to identify the concerns of their region and then address those through the coastal management planning process.
Well, of course, so, like NANA, when it has its borough, then you subsume or consume or do whatever you do, but it's not there and you are, right?
Further questions on this?
If I could just add one more comment. I do think, if some people complain sometimes that the program has been unsuccessful, but I do really think just that getting together and getting people in regions the experience of working together. We're currently working with the Aleutians West region to try and see if a CRSA should be organized in that region. And the meetings we had were the first time those villages have ever gotten together in a room. And to me, that in itself is something.
And she just said a couple of comments. Mm-hmm. This is sort of maybe off the subject, but one of the things just in the people I talked to over the summer, I'd sure like to see more work done that would tie CRNA into the DNR land records. I think the land records are so great that are being developed by DNR, and I know that there's some need for this department to have access or that rather than developing a separate system. And I just, that's an area. And then I really would like to see some kind of strategy and funding that would lead to more areas doing regional strategy and a look at their area. I just think that's going to help you prevent the kind of stuff that's going on in terms of dissolution. People have to feel they're into the process, and if they don't start to do some economic planning, I just think it's disastrous for rural Alaska. Maybe I'm wrong, Frank. No, I am step on my toe.
I think this is where this group would be great for regional planning, but I was thinking more in light of being the government. If you don't have anybody out there, you need somebody for regional planning. I think your groups out there would be good in this case, but not for
local
government.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right on.
Further questions? Okay. Anything else you want to add?
No.
Okay. We appreciate you coming, and thank you very much.
Glad
I'm sure we'll be seeing lots of each other in the next few days. Mm-hmm. So. Okay. Thank you. Anything else to come before the committee? On Thursday, we have Senate Bill 244, which is called Hill's Bill, and tomorrow, I understand, as I said, we should get the report from the Local Boundary Commission. So. And we'll get a chance to do that. So nothing else. Committee's adjourned. Okay.